The sermon for today is titled, What Stance Should the Unitarian Universalist Association Take on War and Violence? This coming June, in Salt Lake City, the UUA General Assembly is supposed to vote on a statement of conscience concerning war and violence. But that will occur only if, before February 1st, 2009, at least one-fourth of all our UUA congregations vote to do that. That is the first hurdle. The very first long-term denominational congressional study action issue was selected by the UUA General Assembly right here in St. Louis in 2006. The procedure is that UU congregations are to study and discuss an issue for 2 years under the leadership of a core team. Then attention shifts to formulating a statement of conscience, SOC, statement of conscience on that issue for adoption at the following General Assembly. In the fourth year, the succeeding year, efforts are undertaken to publicize and implement that statement of conscience. This procedure reflects the fact that we are the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. Consequently, UUA policy decisions should be made by congregations, not just by representatives who happen to be attending a particular General Assembly. The question which the 2006 General Assembly voted to be considered, probably influenced by the war being fought in Iraq, is, should the Unitarian Universalist Association reject the use of any and all kinds of violence and war to resolve disputes between peoples, and instead adopt a principle of seeking just peace through nonviolent means? For many, the issue was to consider whether the UUA should become a peace church like the Mennonites and the Quakers, rather than continuing to follow the traditional UUA just war position, which says that sometimes, like in World War II, violence is required to fight against evil and injustice. The CSAI core team, led by Mac Gelker and Judy Morgan, has taken the view that instead of interpreting this question as a call for debate between just war and pacifist perspectives, it should be viewed as a matter of exploring violence and peacemaking on all levels. Consequently, we have the title Peacemaking for discussion of this issue, as well as a widening of the topic to a consideration of violence and aggressiveness in any context or on any level, not just international relations or relations between peoples. In other words, the core team has expanded the idea of what it is that we want to address, violence at any level. The draft statement of conscience on peacemaking, prepared by the core team, was finalized in November of 2008, and it has been distributed to UUA congregations for their feedback no later than February 1st, the beginning of next month. And you should have all received a copy of this draft statement. If you don't have one, there are others here that you can get later on. And the reason we wanted to put these in your hands is not just for my talk today, but because that's what we're going to be talking about at the semi-annual congregational meeting next Friday evening. Consequently, this congregation will be discussing this statement of conscience at our congregational meeting this coming Friday. The first paragraph lines 1 to 10, aims to provide an introduction to the statement which follows. It cites the issues raised in the original question and calls attention to our sixth principle, which is to promote a world community of peace, liberty, and justice for all. The next section, called Theology and History, lines 11 to 30, notes how our theology of love, compassion, and inclusiveness leads us as a denomination to support peace and to oppose war and violence. But diverse viewpoints remain within our denomination on specific issues related to war and peace. Our commitment to persuasion over coercion is consistent with the covenantal charter of the United Nations. In the past, some of our leaders have strongly supported the need to use war and violence to combat evil and injustice, while others have just as vigorously rejected participation in war and championed a pacifist stance. So we have both of these perceptions, viewpoints in our own denominational history. The section Pacifism and Just War, lines 31 to 42, seeks to clarify these two opposing views. It notes that the term just war really means justified war, and lists the usual criteria used to decide whether resorting to war is justified. It is noted that there are variations of these two general views, and it says that all of them are stances of conscience and reason. In other words, recognizing there's some validity to both of these views. Human biology, lines 43 to 54, responds to the notion that war cannot be abolished because humans are genetically disposed to violence, both individually and collectively. Such dispositions to violence do exist, but humans have also evolved an inclination to cooperative behavior based on morality and a reluctance to use violence. They have also learned how to create political and legal institutions which minimize the use of violence. The section Just Peacemaking, lines 55 to 78, attempts to move the discussion to a new level, that is, beyond just war theory versus pacifism, on a basis that honors both of these viewpoints. The criteria used to determine whether war is justified, according to this statement, should be converted to guidelines for, and here I am quoting, what justifies the humanitarian preservation or restoration of peace. If force is ever to be used, it must be in the service of ending violence of a much greater magnitude, end of quote. The goal should be, quote, a culture of peace that makes war and all other forms of violence avoidable and universally recognized as reprehensible and ineffective for honoring human rights and human dignity. We should aim for, quote, a culture of peace at all levels of human interaction, unquote. Call to action, line 79 to 125, moves from the general concept of just peacemaking to the more specific actions which should be undertaken individually and collectively. This part on proposed actions contains five sections: international peacemaking, societal peacemaking, congregational peacemaking, interpersonal peacemaking, and peacemaking. The international dimension focuses on supporting the UN office and its efforts to advance several UN initiatives, the UU Service Committee in its effort to stop torture and to change the ongoing systems that keep some groups poor. That's what they mean by structural violence. Interfaith groups which advocate for the right of conscientious objection. And D, the creation of a national working group of Unitarian Universalists to distribute information on peacemaking programs and resources. The societal dimension focuses on supporting socially responsible investing of denominational assets, denominational efforts to eradicate all forms of cultural and economic oppression, and the UU Ministry for Earth and its efforts to promote lifestyles and policies which protect the environment. The congregational dimension focuses on developing peace teams to train and teach about compassionate communication and conflict resolution and promotion of a culture of peace. The development and honoring of behavior covenants within congregations. Religious education programs which teach conflict resolution and compassionate communication and involvement in social justice ventures, and the use of UU resources on peacemaking, and being a peacemaking resource within our local communities in cooperation with other faith traditions. This expression of compassionate communication has to do with using one's language in such a way that you don't put other people down and show respect for their viewpoints, even if they're different. The interpersonal dimension focuses on practicing compassionate communication, honoring congregational behavior covenants, and adopting lifestyles which preserve the environment. The inner dimension calls on individuals to develop spiritual practices that impart internal peace. And then the final statement, lines 126 to 27, commits us to practice peace by minimizing violence at all levels of human interaction. Now I want to make some personal observations about this draft statement. First, the title of the statement, in my opinion, should be changed from peacemaking to toward a just and lasting peace. Why? Because the term peacemaking has now come to be used by the United Nations and others involved in peace work to refer to a very limited group of specific activities, which are to be contrasted with peacekeeping on the one hand and peace building on the other. So you have peacekeeping, peacemaking, and peace building as specific kinds of activities. Using this term peacemaking to refer to our whole general statement makes it seem that we are ignorant about that other use of this term. So I think we ought to just change the title. In the section on human biology, after the sentence, cooperative behavior is the foundation of nonviolence and peace, lines 52-53, I think that the last two sentences, lines 53 and 54, should be replaced by this sentence. The establishment of democratic government is an important example of socially cooperative behavior that promotes peace and justice. I will soon explain the appropriateness of this addition. The weakest, in my opinion, but potentially most valuable part of the statement is the section titled Just Peacemaking, which really means making just peace. I think that a better title for this part would be Creating a Just and Lasting Peace. A crucial sentence in this section, lines 63-64, says, quote, and I think this captures exactly what we should be doing. We need an approach to conflict, including the horrific conflict that is war, which transcends the dichotomy of pacifism versus just war theory. This sentence states the problem succinctly and is directly relevant to the issue raised in the original question raised in 2006. The UUA needs a statement on the issue of war, something which goes beyond the traditional dichotomy of pacifism versus just war theory. That's what we as a denomination desperately need. Let's make it clear, where do we stand? We need a statement which makes it clear that we humans have already found a way to nonviolently work out conflicts about issues of justice. We make use of this way within many of our national governments, including our own. Is there any chance of some kind of war within the United States? No, because we've got political and judicial ways of working out the conflicts. One example, and I've used this before in my sermons, on the issue of abortion. Will we have a war here between those who have one viewpoint and those who have another viewpoint? No, because it's going to get worked out in the political process and in the courts. We're just not going to have war. And anybody that resorts to violence hurts their own point of view. That's the nature of democracy. The key to creating a just and lasting peace is to establish the rule of law under a democratic government, where the rulers are elected by the people for limited terms of office, where there is freedom of speech and freedom of religion and freedom of thought and freedom of the press and freedom of association. Conflict is not eliminated, but the means are created to manage conflict through political and legal processes, rather than resorting to violence. Those who feel they are being treated unjustly have the opportunity to use arguments to appeal their case to everyone. They don't have to become terrorists. They have an opportunity to have their viewpoint heard. In a democracy, by a vote of the majority, the current rulers can be voted out of office and replaced by others, which we're seeing happen right in our own country now. This conclusion about how to get a just and lasting peace is supported not only by experience, but also by a careful consideration of exactly what war is. What is war? War is large-scale violent conflict between organized groups seeking political power. Note that not all conflict is war. Some conflict may, in fact, be desirable. So it is not necessary to get rid of all conflict, but only to manage it so that it does not get violent. Note also in that definition that war is between organized groups, not individuals. So the solution to the problem of war must deal with group behavior, not the behavior of individuals who have personally committed themselves to nonviolence. That's not going to solve the problem because it's group against group. Note that the aim of warfare is the gaining of political, that is, governmental power in the community. So solving the war problem requires an alternative way of determining who gets political power, who gets to make the decisions for the whole society. How do we acquire a peaceful society with at least a modicum of justice? We need a government to enforce the laws, and a democratic government to make laws that are for the benefit of the governed. Democratic governments require secret ballots, trustworthy counting of the votes, which is a problem we've had in this country, uncontrolled media, free speech, especially for minorities, and an educated citizenry, a place where I feel we're in trouble right now because of the failure to educate our young people adequately about what democracy is about, what our history is about. We have witnessed how well this works within many democratic nation states. What is required now is to implement full democracy in all nation states, including our own, by eliminating the undue influence of money on our elections. We've got to make our own country more democratic. We also need to create a democracy for the whole world community by converting the current United Nations into a democratic world federation with a democratically elected world parliament and a world executive. It wouldn't have to be an individual, it could be a committee. Just as our own country went from being governed by the Articles of Confederation to a federal government created by the U.S. Constitution in 1787 to 1789, so the leaders of the nations need to create a constitution to change the United Nations into a world federation, to do on the global level what we did 200 years ago on the national level. At present, nations with unlimited national sovereignty go to war and arm themselves as much as they can because there is no authority over them and no way to work out their conflicts by political and legal means. They count how many nuclear weapons do you have, how many tanks do you have, how many soldiers. In a democratic system, you ask, how many votes do you have? At the same time, our own states in the United States operate with limited state sovereignty and a federal government to deal with problems for the country as a whole, including conflicts between state governments. How much do our states need to worry about developing armies and armaments because of possible war with other states? Are we concerned about invasion from Indiana or Missouri? It's ridiculous. How much do our states depend on the military? Not at all. The development of the European Union also shows how this principle of resolving conflict by political and judicial means can lead to the reduction of the need for national military defense. What should this UUA General Assembly affirm concerning the way to replace war and violence and enduring peace and justice, with enduring peace and justice? We should proclaim that what the world needs is democracy within countries plus democracy for the world community. Such a stance would reaffirm our fifth principle on democracy and our sixth principle on world community. Here is my proposed wording for this important section on creating a just and lasting peace. We need to develop, and Friday night I'll bring a copy of this for you. We need to develop a trustworthy and nonviolent way of resolving disputes between peoples. Our aim should be to abolish war completely so that individuals in our country, as well as in other countries, will no longer be forced to decide between serving in the military forces of their nation on the one hand or being conscientious objectors on the other. We need to develop a system on the global level, as well as within countries, that allows people to fight against injustice without having to resort to violence in order to call attention to their concerns. We already know what kind of system is needed. We have such a system in this country and in many other democratic nations. It is a system based on the rule of law, where those who make the laws and those who enforce them rule with the consent of the governed and for limited terms of office. It is a system which has voting by secret ballots, trustworthy counting of the votes, a free media, free speech, especially for minorities, and an educated citizenry. We need to persuade the leaders of our country that such a global system of democracy is much better for this country and for the world than an American empire or a world controlled by the military and economic power of this country or as an alliance of a limited number of countries. Working to develop such a democratic federation for the world community is completely consistent with our own UUA principles, especially our fifth principle, the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, and our sixth principle, a world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. We realize that our efforts to achieve this end of creating a just and lasting peace will require not only our involvement in our national political system, but also involvement in civil society organizations working for peace and justice, and the education and commitment of individuals to a culture of peace, to the rule of law, and to the welfare of the whole global community. That's the substitute for that paragraph that I'm going to be suggesting that maybe this congregation would want to affirm that. We'll find out Friday night. Returning to the recommended minor changes in the existing draft, in the section Calls to Action, International Peacekeeping, after line 97, I would add a fifth point, encouraging our members to participate in the political life of the community and to be active in civil organizations striving to advance peace and justice. My concern is with the draft statement, it sounds like virtually the only way you can work for peace and justice is through the Unitarian Universalist Association. And it seems to me there are many other possibilities, and we need to encourage the members of our congregations to use these others and not confine their activities to what goes on within the denomination. Well, you have now heard my summary of the UUA draft statement on peacekeeping, along with my recommendations for modifications. I hope that you will join us for our discussion of this document at the congregational meeting on Friday evening, January 16th. Thank you.